The advice from a caterpillar. At last the caterpillar took the hook out of its mouth and addressed Alice in a languid, sleepy voice. "Who are you?" said the caterpillar. Alice replied, rather shyly, I hardly know, sir. Just at present, at least I know who I was when I got up this morning, but I think I must have changed several times since then." "What do you mean by that?" said the caterpillar, sternly. "Explain yourself." "I can't explain myself, I'm afraid, sir," said Alice, "because I'm not myself. You see, being so many different sizes in a day is very confusing." She drew herself up and said very gravely, "I think you ought to tell me who you are, first." "Why?" said the caterpillar. As Alice could not think of any good reason and the caterpillar seemed to be in a very unpleasant state of mind, she turned away. "Come back," the caterpillar called after her. "I've something important to say." Alice turned and came back again. "Keep your temper," said the caterpillar. "Is that all?" said Alice, swallowing down her anger as well as she could. "No," said the caterpillar. It unfolded its arms, took the hook out of its mouth again, and said, "So you think you're changed, do you?" "I'm afraid I am, sir," said Alice. "I can't remember things as I used, and I don't keep the same size for 10 minutes together." "What size do you want to be?" asked the caterpillar. "Oh, I'm not particular as to size," Alice hastily replied. "Only one doesn't like changing so often, you know." "I should like to be a little larger, sir, if you wouldn't mind," said Alice. 3 inches is such a wretched height to be." "It is a very good height indeed," said the caterpillar angrily, rearing itself upright as it spoke. It was exactly 3 inches high. In a minute or two, the caterpillar got down off the mushroom and crawled away into the grass, merely remarking, as it went, "One side will make you grow taller, and the other side will make you grow shorter." "One side of what? The other side of what?" thought Alice to herself. "Of the mushroom," said the caterpillar, just as if she had asked it aloud. And in another moment, it was out of sight. Alice remained looking thoughtfully at the mushroom for a minute, trying to make out which were the two sides of it. At last she stretched her arms round it as far as they would go, and broke off a bit of the edge with each hand. "And now which is which?" she said to herself, and nibbled a little of the right-hand bit to try the effect. The next moment she felt a violent blow underneath her chin. It had struck her foot. She was a good deal frightened by this very sudden change, as she was shrinking rapidly. So she set to work at once to eat some of the other bit. Her chin was pressed so closely against her foot that there was hardly room to open her mouth. But she did it at last and managed to swallow a morsel of the left-hand bit. "Come, my head's free at last," said Alice. But all she could see, when she looked down, was an immense length of neck, which seemed to rise like a stalk out of a sea of green leaves that lay far below her. "Where have my shoulders got to? And oh, my poor hands, how is it I can't see you?" She was delighted to find that her neck would bend about easily in any direction, like a serpent. She had just succeeded in curving it down into a graceful zigzag and was going to dive in among the leaves, when a sharp hiss made her draw back in a hurry. A large pigeon had flown into her face and was beating her violently with its wings. "Serpent!" cried the pigeon. "I'm not a serpent," said Alice indignantly. "Let me alone. I've tried the roots of trees, and I've tried banks, and I've tried hedges," the pigeon went on. "But those serpents, there's no pleasing them." Alice was more and more puzzled. "As if it wasn't trouble enough hatching the eggs," said the pigeon. "But I must be on the lookout for serpents, night and day." "And just as I'd taken the highest tree in the wood," continued the pigeon, raising its voice to a shriek, "and just as I was thinking I should be free of them at last, they must needs come wriggling down from the sky."
"Ugh, serpent, but I'm not a serpent, I tell you," said Alice.
I'm a little girl," she added rather doubtfully, as she remembered the number of changes she had gone through that day. "You're looking for eggs. I know that well enough," said the pigeon. "And what does it matter to me whether you're a little girl or a serpent?" "It matters a good deal to me," said Alice hastily. "But I'm not looking for eggs, as it happens, and if I was, I shouldn't want yours. I don't like them raw."
"Well, be off, then," said the pigeon in a sulky tone, as it settled down again into its nest.
Alice crouched down among the trees as well as she could, for her neck kept getting entangled among the branches, and every now and then she had to stop and untwist it. After a while she remembered that she still held the pieces of mushroom in her hands, and she set to work very carefully, nibbling first at one and then at the other, and growing sometimes taller and sometimes shorter, until she had succeeded in bringing herself down to her usual height. It was so long since she had been anything near the right size that it felt quite strange at first. "The next thing is to get into that beautiful garden. How is that to be done, I wonder?" As she said this, she came suddenly upon an open place, with a little house in it about 4 feet high. "Whoever lives there," thought Alice, "it'll never do to come upon them this size. Why, I should frighten them out of their wits." She did not venture to go near the house till she had brought herself down to 9 inches high. "Vay, Pig and Pepper," for a minute or two she stood looking at the house, when suddenly a footman in livery came running out of the wood. Judging by his face only, she would have called him a fish, and rapped loudly at the door with his knuckles. It was opened by another footman in livery, with a round face and large eyes like a frog. The fish footman began by producing from under his arm a great letter, and this he handed over to the other, saying, in a solemn tone, "For the Duchess. An invitation from the Queen to play croquet." The frog footman repeated, in the same solemn tone, "From the Queen. An invitation for the Duchess to play croquet." Then they both bowed low and their curls got entangled together. When Alice next peeped out, the fish footman was gone, and the other was sitting on the ground near the door, staring stupidly up into the sky. Alice went timidly up to the door and knocked. "There's no sort of use in knocking," said the footman, "and that for two reasons. First, because I'm on the same side of the door as you are. Secondly, because they're making such a noise inside, no one could possibly hear you. And certainly there was a most extraordinary noise going on within, a constant howling and sneezing, and every now and then a great crash, as if a dish or kettle had been broken to pieces." "How am I to get in?" asked Alice.
"Are you to get in at all?" said the footman. "That's the first question, you know."
Alice opened the door and went in. The door led right into a large kitchen, which was full of smoke from one end to the other. The Duchess was sitting on a three-legged stool in the middle, nursing a baby.
The cook was leaning over the fire, stirring a large cauldron which seemed to be full of soup. "There's certainly too much pepper in that soup," Alice said to herself, as well as she could for sneezing. Even the Duchess sneezed occasionally, and as for the baby, it was sneezing and howling alternately without a moment's pause. The only two creatures in the kitchen that did not sneeze were the cook and a large cat, which was grinning from ear to ear. "Please would you tell me," said Alice, a little timidly, "why your cat grins like that?" "It's a Cheshire cat," said the Duchess, "and that's why." "I didn't know that Cheshire cats always grinned. In fact, I didn't know that cats could grin," said Alice. "You don't know much," said the Duchess, "and that's a fact." Just then the cook took the cauldron of soup off the fire, and at once set to work throwing everything within her reach at the Duchess and the baby. The fire irons came first. Then followed a shower of saucepans, plates and dishes. The Duchess took no notice of them, even when they hit her, and the baby was howling so much already that it was quite impossible to say whether the blows hurt it or not. "Oh, please mind what you're doing," cried Alice, jumping up and down in an agony of terror. "Here, you may nurse it a bit, if you like," the Duchess said to Alice, flinging the baby at her as she spoke. "I must go and get ready to play croquet with the Queen," and she hurried out of the room. Alice caught the baby with some difficulty, as it was a queer-shaped little creature and held out its arms and legs in all directions. "If I don't take this child away with me," thought Alice, "they're sure to kill it in a day or two. Wouldn't it be murder to leave it behind?" She said the last words out loud, and the little thing grunted in reply. "If you're going to turn into a pig, my dear," said Alice, "I'll have nothing more to do with you." "Mind now," Alice was just beginning to think to herself, "now, what am I to do with this creature when I get it home?" When it grunted again so violently that Alice looked down into its face in some alarm. This time there could be no mistake about it, it was neither more nor less than a pig. So she set the little creature down and felt quite relieved to see it trot away quietly into the wood. Alice was a little startled by seeing the Cheshire cat sitting on a bough of a tree a few yards off. The cat only grinned when it saw her. "Cheshire Puss," began Alice, rather timidly, "would you please tell me which way I ought to go from here?" "In that direction," the cat said, waving the right paw round, "lives a hatter. And in that direction," waving the other paw, "lives a March Hare. Visit either you like. They're both mad." "But I don't want to go among mad people," Alice remarked. "Oh, you can't help that," said the cat. "We're all mad here. Do you play croquet with the Queen today?" "I should like it very much," said Alice, "but I haven't been invited yet." "You'll see me there," said the cat, and vanished. Alice had not gone much farther before she came in sight of the house of the March Hare. It was so large a house that she did not like to go near till she had nibbled some more of the left-hand bit of mushroom. VIIMADTEA party, there was a table set out under a tree in front of the house, and the March Hare and the Hatter were having tea at it. A dormouse was sitting between them, fast asleep. The table was a large one, but the three were all crowded together at one corner of it. "No room! No room!" they cried out when they saw Alice coming. "There's plenty of room," said Alice indignantly, and she sat down in a large armchair at one end of the table. The Hatter opened his eyes very wide on hearing this, but all he said was, "Why is a raven like a writing desk?"
"I'm glad they've begun asking riddles. I believe I can guess that," she added aloud.
"Do you mean that you think you can find out the answer to it?" said the March Hare.
"Exactly so," said Alice.
"Then you should say what you mean," the March Hare went on.
"I do," Alice hastily replied. At least I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know."
"You might just as well say," added the Dormouse, which seemed to be talking in its sleep, "that I breathe when I sleep is the same thing as I sleep when I breathe."
"It is the same thing with you," said the Hatter, and he poured a little hot tea upon its nose.
The Dormouse shook its head impatiently and said, without opening its eyes, of course, just what I was going to remark myself."
"Have you guessed the riddle yet?" the Hatter said, turning to Alice again.
"No, I give it up," Alice replied. "What's the answer?"
"I haven't the slightest idea," said the Hatter.
"Nor I," said the March Hare.
Alice gave a weary sigh.
"I think you might do something better with the time," she said, "than wasting it in asking riddles that have no answers."
"Take some more tea," the March Hare said to Alice, very earnestly.
"I've had nothing yet," Alice replied in an offended tone, "so I can't take more."
"You mean you can't take less," said the Hatter. "It's very easy to take more than nothing."
At this, Alice got up and walked off. The Dormouse fell asleep instantly, and neither of the others took the least notice of her going, though she looked back once or twice. The last time she saw them, they were trying to put the Dormouse into the teapot.
Illustration: The Trial of the Knave of Hearts. "At any rate, I'll never go there again," said Alice, as she picked her way through the wood. "It's the stupidest tea party I ever was at in all my life." Just as she said this, she noticed that one of the trees had a door leading right into it. "That's very curious," she thought. "I think I may as well go in at once." And in she went. Once more she found herself in the long hall and close to the little glass table. Taking the little golden key, she unlocked the door that led into the garden. Then she set to work nibbling at the mushroom. She had kept a piece of it in her pocket till she was about a foot high. Then she walked down a little passage. And then she found herself at last in the beautiful garden, among the bright flower beds and the cool fountains.
VIII, Queen's Croquet Ground. A large rose tree stood near the entrance of the garden. The roses growing on it were white, but there were three gardeners at it, busily painting them red. Suddenly their eyes chanced to fall upon Alice, as she stood watching them.
"Would you tell me, please," said Alice, a little timidly, "why you are painting those roses?"
Five and seven said nothing, but looked at two.
Two began, in a low voice,
"Why, the fact is, you see, miss, this here ought to have been a red rose tree, and we put a white one in by mistake. And, if the queen was to find it out, we should all have our heads cut off, you know. So you see, miss, we're doing our best, afore she comes." Two, at this moment, five, who had been anxiously looking across the garden, called out, "The queen! The queen!" And the three gardeners instantly threw themselves flat upon their faces. There was a sound of many footsteps, and Alice looked round, eager to see the queen. First came 10 soldiers carrying clubs, with their hands and feet at the corners, next to the 10 courtiers. These were ornamented all over with diamonds. After these came the royal children. There were 10 of them, all ornamented with hearts. Next came the guests, mostly kings and queens, and among them Alice recognized the white rabbit. Then followed the knave of hearts, carrying the king's crown on a crimson velvet cushion. And last of all this grand procession came the king and the queen of hearts. When the procession came opposite to Alice, they all stopped and looked at her, and the queen said severely, "Who is this?" She said it to the knave of hearts, who only bowed and smiled in reply. "My name is Alice, so please your majesty," said Alice very politely. But she added to herself, "Why, they're only a pack of cards. After all, can you play croquet?" shouted the queen. The question was evidently meant for Alice. "Yes," said Alice loudly. "Come on, then," roared the queen. It's a very fine day," said a timid voice to Alice. She was walking by the white rabbit, who was peeping anxiously into her face. "Very," said Alice. "Where's the Duchess?" "Hush, hush," said the rabbit. "She's under sentence of execution." "What for?" said Alice. "She boxed the queen's ears," the rabbit began. "Get to your places," shouted the queen in a voice of thunder, and people began running about in all directions, tumbling up against each other. However, they got settled down in a minute or two, and the game began. Alice thought she had never seen such a curious croquet ground in her life. It was all ridges and furrows. The croquet balls were live hedgehogs, and the mallets live flamingos, and the soldiers had to double themselves up and stand on their hands and feet to make the arches. The players all played at once, without waiting for turns, quarreling all the while and fighting for the hedgehogs. And in a very short time, the queen was in a furious passion and went stamping about and shouting, "Off with his head!" or "Off with her head!" about once in a minute. "They're dreadfully fond of beheading people here," thought Alice. "The great wonder is that there's anyone left alive." She was looking about for some way of escape, when she noticed a curious appearance in the air. "It's the Cheshire Cat," she said to herself. "Now I shall have somebody to talk to." "How are you getting on?" said the cat. "I don't think they play at all fairly," Alice said, in a rather complaining tone. "And they all quarrel so dreadfully one can't hear oneself speak, and they don't seem to have any rules in particular." "How do you like the queen?" said the cat in a low voice. "Not at all," said Alice. Alice thought she might as well go back and see how the game was going on. So she went off in search of her hedgehog. The hedgehog was engaged in a fight with another hedgehog, which seemed to Alice an excellent opportunity for croqueting one of them with the other. The only difficulty was that her flamingo was gone across to the other side of the garden, where Alice could see it trying, in a helpless sort of way, to fly up into a tree. She caught the flamingo and tucked it away under her arm, that it might not escape again. Just then Alice ran across the Duchess, who was now out of prison. She tucked her arm affectionately into Alice's and they walked off together. Alice was very glad to find her in such a pleasant temper. She was a little startled, however, when she heard the voice of the Duchess close to her ear. "You're thinking about something, my dear, and that makes you forget to talk." The game's going on rather better now, Alice said, by way of keeping up the conversation a little.
"'Tis so,' said the Duchess. "'And the moral of that is, oh, tis love. "'Tis love that makes the world go round.' "'Somebody said,' Alice whispered, "'that it's done by everybody minding his own business. "'Ah, well, it means much the same thing,' said the Duchess, "'digging her sharp little chin into Alice's shoulder, "'as she added, "'and the moral of that is, "'take care of the sense and the sounds will take care of themselves.' To Alice's great surprise, the Duchess's arm that was linked into hers began to tremble. Alice looked up and there stood the Queen in front of them, with her arms folded, frowning like a thunderstorm. "Now, I give you fair warning," shouted the Queen, stamping on the ground as she spoke. "Either you or your head must be off, and that in about half no time. Take your choice." The Duchess took her choice, and was gone in a moment. "Let's go on with the game," the Queen said to Alice. And Alice was too much frightened to say a word, but slowly followed her back to the croquet ground. All the time they were playing, the Queen never left off quarreling with the other players and shouting, "Off with his head!" or "Off with her head!" By the end of half an hour or so, all the players, except the king, the queen and Alice, were in custody of the soldiers and under sentence of execution. Then the queen left off, quite out of breath, and walked away with Alice. Alice heard a king say in a low voice to the company generally, "You are all pardoned." Suddenly the cry, "The trial's beginning," was heard in the distance, and Alice ran along with the others. IXWHO stole the tarts. The King and Queen of Hearts were seated on their throne when they arrived, with a great crowd assembled about them, all sorts of little birds and beasts, as well as the whole pack of cards. The knave was standing before them, in chains, with a soldier on each side to guard him. And near the king was the white rabbit, with a trumpet in one hand and a scroll of parchment in the other. In the very middle of the court was a table, with a large dish of tarts upon it. "I wish they'd get the trial done," Alice thought, and hand round the refreshments. The judge, by the way, was the king, and he wore his crown over his great wig. "That's the jury box," thought Alice. "And those 12 creatures, some were animals and some were birds. I suppose they are the jurors." Just then the white rabbit cried out, "Silence in the court, Harold. Read the accusation," said the king. On this, the white rabbit blew 3 blasts on the trumpet, then unrolled the parchment scroll and read as follows: "The Queen of Hearts, she made some tarts, all on a summer day. The Knave of Hearts, he stole those tarts and took them quite away." "Call the first witness," said the king. And the white rabbit blew 3 blasts on the trumpet and called out, "First witness." The first witness was the Hatter. He came in with a teacup in one hand and a piece of bread and butter in the other. "You ought to have finished," said the king. "When did you begin?" The Hatter looked at the March Hare, who had followed him into the court, arm in arm with the Dormouse. 14th of March, I think it was," he said. "Give your evidence," said the king, "and don't be nervous, or I'll have you executed on the spot." This did not seem to encourage the witness at all. He kept shifting from one foot to the other, looking uneasily at the queen, and, in his confusion, he bit a large piece out of his teacup instead of the bread and butter. Just at this moment Alice felt a very curious sensation. She was beginning to grow larger again. The miserable Hatter dropped his teacup and bread and butter and went down on one knee. "I'm a poor man,"
Your Majesty, he began.
You're a very poor speaker, said the king.
You may go, said the king, and the hatter hurriedly left the court.
Call the next witness, said the king.
The next witness was the duchess's cook. She carried the pepper box in her hand and the people near the door began sneezing all at once.
Give your evidence, said the king.
Shot and tea, said the cook.
The king looked anxiously at the white rabbit, who said, in a low voice, Your Majesty must cross-examine this witness.
Well, if I must, I must, the king said. What are tarts made of?
Pepper, mostly, said the cook.
For some minutes the whole court was in confusion and by the time they had settled down again, the cook had disappeared.
Never mind, said the king. Call the next witness.
Alice watched the white rabbit as he fumbled over the list. Imagine her surprise when he read out, at the top of his shrill little voice, the name Alice, X, Alice's evidence, here, cried Alice. She jumped up in such a hurry that she tipped over the jury box, upsetting all the jurymen onto the heads of the crowd below.
Oh, I beg your pardon, she exclaimed in a tone of great dismay.
The trial cannot proceed, said the king, until all the jurymen are back in their proper places, all, he repeated with great emphasis, looking hard at Alice.
What do you know about this business?
The king said to Alice.
Nothing whatever, said Alice.
The king then read from his book, Rule 42. All persons more than a mile high to leave the court.
I'm not a mile high, said Alice.
Nearly 2 miles high, said the queen.
Well, I shan't he go, at any rate, said Alice.
The king turned pale and shut his notebook hastily.
Consider your verdict, he said to the jury, in a low, trembling voice.
There's more evidence to come yet, please your majesty, said the white rabbit, jumping up in a great hurry. This paper has just been picked up. It seems to be a letter written by the prisoner to somebody. He unfolded the paper as he spoke and added, It isn't a letter, after all. It's a set of verses.
Please, your majesty, said the knave. I didn't write it and they can't prove that I did. There's no name signed at the end.
You must have meant some mischief, or else you'd have signed your name like an honest man, said the king. There was a general clapping of hands at this.
Read them, he added, turning to the white rabbit.
There was dead silence in the court whilst the white rabbit read out the verses.
That's the most important piece of evidence we've heard yet, said the king.
I don't believe there's an atom of meaning in it, ventured Alice.
If there's no meaning in it, said the king, that saves a world of trouble, you know, as we needn't try to find any. Let the jury consider their verdict.
No, no, said the queen. Sentence first, verdict afterwards.
Stuff and nonsense, said Alice loudly. The idea of having the sentence first, hold your tongue, said the queen, turning purple.
I won't, said Alice.
Off with her head, the queen shouted at the top of her voice.
Nobody moved.
Who cares for you?
said Alice. She had grown to her full size by this time. You're nothing but a pack of cards. At this, the whole pack rose up in the air and came flying down upon her. She gave a little scream, half of fright and half of anger, and tried to beat them off, and found herself lying on the bank, with her head in the lap of her sister, who was gently brushing away some dead leaves that had fluttered down from the trees upon her face. "Wake up, Alice dear," said her sister. "Why, what a long sleep you've had. Oh, I've had such a curious dream," said Alice. And she told her sister, as well as she could remember them, all these strange adventures of hers that you have just been reading about. Alice got up and ran off, thinking while she ran, as well she might, what a wonderful dream it had been.